What Ho Jeeves by P.G. Wodehouse. Starring Michael Horden as Jeeves and Richard Briers as Bertie Wooster in Joy in the Morning, with Peter Woodthorpe as Percy Lord Worplesdon, Jonathan Cecil as Boko Fittleworth, and Anise Breyer as Edwin, the Boy Scout. Episode 5, Schemes and Ruses.
It had been quite an evening in the gardens and messuages of Bumpley Hall. First, Boko Fittleworth's plan to sweeten my Uncle Percy into letting him marry his ward, Nobby Hopwood, had blown a fuse when he'd locked J. Chichester Clam, with whom the relative had a secret business appointment, in the potting shed. Then Jeeves had put forward a new scheme of such ghastliness that I had vetoed it on the spot, causing Boko to stump off in high dudgeon. Almost immediately, Edwin, the Boy Scout, Uncle Percy's son by his first marriage, under the impression that I was a burglar, had sloshed me on the bean with his scout stick, bringing up a lump the size of a golf ball. And I was still recovering from this when Florence Cray, Edwin's frightful sister, had appeared, quivering gently as if in the early stages of palsy, and with a face pale and set like the white of a hard-boiled egg. She informed me that due to a difference of opinion with him, she had just scratched her engagement to Stilton Cheesewright, the local copper, and would consequently be marrying me. She then beetled off, leaving me more or less rooted to the S. The awful thing that had come upon me had practically turned me into a pillar of salt. Presently, however, life returned to the rigid limbs, and I started to plod my weary way back to Boko's. Eventually, I won through to the sitting room, only to find mine host, still full to the brim of dudgeon, eyeing me as if I were a caterpillar in some salad of which he was about to partake.
Oh, it's you, Wooster. I saw Nobby and told her you declined to sit in on Jeeves's scheme.
Oh, yes.
As I anticipated, she cried buckets.
I'm sorry.
So you should be. Yours was the hand that wrenched those pearly drops from her eyes.
Oh, dash it.
It's no good saying, oh, dash it. You have a conscience, I presume. Then it must have informed you that you were directly responsible for the downpour. Now let me try one final time. All we're asking you to do is to go into your Uncle Percy's study at 10 sharp tomorrow and tick him off like the dickens so that I can step in and defend the old buster.
I'm sorry, Boko, I can't call Uncle Percy names.
Well, if anybody had told me that Bertie Wooster would let me die...
You said that before.
And I shall go on saying it, even under 70 times 7. And another thing, where the devil have you been? What kept you?
Well, for one thing, I was being biffed over the nut by Edwin with a hockey stick. That took time.
What?
Yes.
He socked you with a hockey stick?
Right on the bean.
Fine little chap, Edwin. Good stuff in that boy. Got nice ideas.
Don't jibe and scoff. I want sympathy, Boko. Sympathy and advice. Do you know what?
What?
I am engaged to Florence.
What? Again? What's become of Stilton?
Stilton has got the push. I will tell you the whole ghastly story. Uncle Percy wouldn't let him arrest J. Chichester, the man in the potting shed. And when Florence told him that anyway, modern enlightened thought held that imprisonment merely brutalizes the criminal, he turned on her like a tiger.
Golly.
Yes. They then went to the mat and started chewing pieces out of each other. And the upshot was...
She handed him the mitten.
Yes.
And took up her option on you.
Exactly.
Gosh. Well, there, but for the grace of God, goes George Webster Fittleworth.
Yes, that's all very well, Boko, and I'm sure you have my very heartiest congratulations. But the basic fact with which we have to deal is that there actually does go Bertram Wooster. Have you nothing to suggest?
Is any man safe? First you, then me. But I did think that the black spot had finally passed into Stilton's possession.
So did I.
It's a shame it hasn't, because he really loves that girl, Bertie. No doubt you've been feeling a decent pity for Stilton, but I assure you it was wasted. He loves her. And when a man with a head as fat as that loves, it is forever.
Yes, 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 but it's not Stilton I'm worrying about, Boko, old man. It's me. The really vital question is, where does Bertram get off? How do we extricate poor old Wooster?
Ah, you really want to be extricated?
My dear chap.
She'd be a good influence in your life, remember. Steadying, educative.
Would you torture me, Boko?
Well, how did you extricate yourself when you were engaged to her last time? Couldn't the same technique be employed in the present crisis?
I'm afraid not. There was something she wanted me to do for her, and I failed to do it, and she gave me the air. These circs could not arise again.
I see. Well, it's a pity you can't use the method I did then. The Fittleworth system. simple and efficacious. That would solve all your difficulties.
Why can't I use it?
Because you don't know what it is.
You could tell me.
No, Bertie. Not after the extraordinary attitude that you've seen fit to take up with regard to my proposals for sweetening your Uncle Percy. If you were to reconsider your refusal to chip in, but what's the use of talking about it? You've declined, and that's that. I know your iron will. When you come to a decision, it stays come to.
You absolutely guarantee this secret method?
I can only tell you that it produced immediate and gratifying results in my own case. One moment I was engaged to Florence, the next I wasn't. Quick as that.
And you'll tell it me if I promise to tick Uncle Percy off?
I'll tell it you after you've ticked him off.
Why not now?
Just a whim.
Oh, but you'll tell me without fail after I've done the deed?
Without fail.
All right, Boko. I'll do it.
Splendid fellow!
It was but a troubled slumber that I enjoyed that night, much disturbed by dreams of Uncle Percy chasing me with his hunting crop. Waking next morning, I found that though the heart was leaden, the weather conditions were of the best and brightest. I rose accordingly, and having assembled sponge and towel, proceeded to the river for a bit of torso sluicing. I hadn't gone far along the bank when there came to my ears the swish of a fishing line, and there was Jeeves, harrying the finny denizens like nobody's business. As it was to this fly-caster that I owed my present hideous predicament, you will not be surprised to learn that my manner, as I came abreast, was on the distant side.
Ah, Jeeves.
Good morning, sir. A lovely day.
Lovely for some of us, perhaps, Jeeves, but not for the last of the Woosters, who, thanks to you, is faced by a binge beside which all former binges fade into insignificance.
Yes, sir.
Jeeves, you've got me into this bally enterprise. I demand you get me out, instanter. Yeah,
but surely, sir, if you have decided to fall in with the scheme, it was entirely your kind heart that led you to do so. It must have been optional for you to have declined to lend assistance.
Huh!
Sir?
I said, huh, Jeeves, and I meant, huh. Do you know what happened last night?
So much happened last night, sir.
True, but the tops came after you left me in the garden. Lady Florence arrived in my midst, having just handed Stilton his hat for saying derogatory things about modern enlightened thought. Within 5 minutes, she was betrothed once more to the toad beneath the harrow you see before you.
Indeed, sir.
Yes, indeed, Jeeves. And the reason I consented to sit in on this scheme of yours was that Boko confided to me last night that he had a simple, infallible remedy for getting out of being engaged to this specific girl. And he won't tell me what it is till I've interviewed Uncle Percy.
I see, sir.
I must learn it at all costs. Now, you don't happen to know what it was that made Lady Florence sever her relations with Boko, do you?
I fear I am unable to hazard a conjecture, sir. Would you wish me to institute inquiries among the domestic staff at the Hall?
I say, an excellent idea, Jeeves.
It is possible that some members of that unit may have become cognizant of the facts, sir. One has usually found them well informed.
Absolutely. Carry on then, Jeeves, and bear in mind that speed is essential. I must have your report before 10 o'clock, so be at the main gate of the Hall, well, let us say at 9:30.
Very good, sir.
Well, Jeeves?
I have the data you require, sir.
Splendid fellow! You saw the butler? You probed the cook?
Actually, it was from the boy who cleans the knives and boots that I secured the information, sir. A young fellow of the name of Herbert.
Herbert? How did he come to be our special correspondent?
It appears that he was actually an eyewitness of the scene, sir. The first thing that attracted the lad's attention was the approach of Master Edwin.
He comes into it, does he?
Yes, sir. His role, as you will see, is an important one. Master Edwin, Herbert reports, was advancing through the undergrowth, his gaze fixed upon the ground. He seemed to be tracking something.
Spooring, no doubt. It is a practice to which these scouts are much addicted.
So I understand, sir. His movements, Herbert noted, were being observed with a sisterly indulgence by Lady Florence, who was cutting flowers in an adjacent boulder.
She was watching him, eh?
Yes, sir. Simultaneously, Mr. Fittleworth appeared following the young gentleman.
Spooring the spoorer?
Yes, sir. Herbert describes his manner as keen and purposeful. That at least was his meaning, though the actual phrasing of his statement was different. To these knives and boots boys seldom express themselves well.
I've often noticed it rotten vocabulary. But go on, Jeeves, I'm all agog. Boko, you say, was trailing Edwin? Why?
It was not long before Mr. Fittleworth's motives were abundantly clear, sir. As Master Edwin approached the flower bed, he suddenly accelerated his movements.
Edwin did?
No, sir, Mr. Fittleworth. He bounded forward at the young gentleman, and taking advantage of the fact that the latter, in the course of his spurring, had just adopted a stooping posture, proceeded to deliver a forceful kick upon his person.
Golly, Jeeves!
Causing him to fly through the air and fall at Lady Florence's feet. Her ladyship, horrified and incensed, rebuked Mr. Fittleworth sharply, demanding an immediate explanation of this wanton assault. The latter endeavoured to justify his action by accusing Master Edwin of having tampered with his patent egg boiler, so disorganizing the mechanism that a new-laid egg had flown from its base and struck him on the tip of the nose. Her ladyship, however, was unable to see her way to accepting this as a palliation of what had occurred, and shortly afterwards announced that the betrothal was at an end.
So that's the Fittleworth remedy, booting young Edwin.
Exactly, sir.
No wonder Boko says it's simple and efficacious. All you need is a good stout shoe and a sister's love.
Precisely, sir. If you will glance to your left, sir, you will observe that Master Edwin has just entered the drive and is stooping over some object on the ground that appears to have engaged his attention.
Yes. Yes, there he is, Jeeves, and, as you say, stooping. But do you really advise?
I do, sir.
What, now?
Yes, sir. There is a tide in the affairs of men which, taken at the flood, leads on to fortune. Omitted, all the voyage of their life is bound in shallows and in miseries.
Oh, yes, rather. I mean, quite no argument about that, but...
If what you are trying to say, sir, is that it is of the essence that Lady Florence be present to observe the proceedings, as she did in the case of Mr. Fittleworth, I fully concur. I would suggest that I go and inform her ladyship that you are waiting on the drive and would be glad of a word with her.
Thank you, Jeeves. Yes, all the same.
Sir?
But I hesitate, Jeeves. Not because a little squirt doesn't deserve to be kicked, but, well, there's something rather embarrassing about booting a child in cold blood. Difficult to lead up to it in the course of conversation, don't you know? Hello, Edwin, how are you? Lovely day. Biff, see what I mean? Not easy.
Precisely, sir. Your irresolution is quite understandable. Between the acting of a dreadful thing and the first motion, all the interim is like a phantasma or a hideous dream, sir.
Absolutely, Jeeves, and if I may say so, very well put.
Thank you, sir.
Nevertheless...
If it would assist you to stiffen the sinews and summon up the blood, sir, may I remind you that it is very nearly 10 o'clock and that only the promptest action along the lines I have indicated can enable you to avoid appearing in his lordship's study at that hour.
You're right, Jeeves. Now, how long do you think it'll be necessary to detain young Edwin in conversation before you can bring Lady Florence on stage?
Not more than a few minutes, sir. I happen to know that her ladyship is at the moment in her private apartment engaged upon literary work. There will be but a brief interval before she appears.
Then tally-ho, Jeeves.
Very good, sir.
Ah, hello, young Edwin.
Oh, hello, Bertie. I say, Bertie, I did another act of kindness this morning.
Oh, yes?
I finished pasting the notices of Florence's novel in her album. Did you know Florence had written a novel? It's called Spindrift. That puts me all right up to last Wednesday.
Ah, good work. You're catching up. And what do you think you're doing now?
I'm studying ants. Do you know anything about ants, Bertie?
Only from meeting them at picnics.
I've been reading up about them. Very interesting.
Vastly, I shouldn't wonder. Tell me something about them.
Well... Did you know ants can talk?
Talk?
In a sort of way. To other ants, of course. They do it by tapping their heads on a leaf. Oh, yes. How's your head this morning, Bertie? I nearly forgot to ask.
Still on the tender side.
I thought it would be cool. That was funny last night, wasn't it? I laughed for hours when I got to bed.
You laughed, did you?
Rather.
Yes. Come along, Florence.
What?
What? Nothing. Nothing. No. Tell me more about ants, young Edwin. And you seem to be bulging with information about them.
Did you know that ants were members of the Hymenoptera family?
Really? Well, well. Quite the nibs, eh?
Yes. And they're characterized by unusual distinctness of the three regions of the body: head, thorax and abdomen, and by the stack or petiole of the abdomen having one or two scales or nodes, so that the abdomen moves very freely on the truck or thorax.
You wouldn't fool me.
The female, after laying her eggs, feeds the larvae with food regurgitated from her stomach.
Try to keep it clean, my lad.
Both males and females are winged.
And why not?
But the female pulls off its wings and runs about without them.
I question that. I doubt if even an ant would be such an ass.
It's quite true. It says so in the book. Have you ever seen ants fight?
Not that I remember.
They rise on their hind hind legs and curve the abdomen like this.
Don't get up.
Why not? Cool. Here comes Florence.
Oh, my golly. Hello.
What's the matter?
Have you dropped a sixpence?
No.
Somebody has. Look.
Where?
Under that bush.
Cool.
Right. Now, young Edwin.
Ow! Ah, thank you, Bertie.
Thank me?
Yes. It was just what I was going to do myself. Edwin, come here. Oh, cool. Cool. I'll catch up with him later. Thank you, Bertie. I'd like to skin him. I've just been looking at my album of press clippings, and he's gone and pasted in half the reviews of Spindrift wrong side up. I believe he did it on purpose. It's a pity I couldn't catch him. There it is. I can't tell you how grateful I am, Bertie, for what you did. What gave you the idea?
Oh, it just came to me.
I understand. Sort of sudden inspiration. The central theme of Spindrift came to be like that. Jeeves said you wanted to speak to me. Is this something very important?
Oh, no, not important.
Then we'll keep it till later. I must go back now and see if there isn't some way of floating those clippings off with hot water. Goodbye, Bertie.
Toodle-pip. Oh, my golly. Oh, dash it. Dash it.
Bertie! Bertie!
What? What? Oh, Nobby. Sorry, I was musing.
Well, stop musing. You'll be late.
Late?
For Uncle Percy in the study. Boko's moving up into position now. I just spotted him slinking through the undergrowth by the lake.
Oh, that's off.
Off?
Yes, young Nobby, off. My reward for sitting in on the scheme was to have been the learning of the Fittleworth secret process for getting out of being engaged to Florence. I have learned it, and it's a washout. I therefore hand in my portfolio.
You mean you won't help us?
Well, in some other way to be decided on later, certainly, but not by inflaming Uncle Percy.
Oh, Bertie.
And it's no good saying, oh, Bertie.
But I don't understand.
Then I will explain very briefly. Boko claimed that booting young Edwin was an infallible method of oiling out of one's obligations towards Florence. It quite simply is not. So unless he has something else to suggest...
No, but he has. I mean, I have...
You?
You want Florence to break off the engagement?
I do.
Well, go and talk to Uncle Percy... And I'll show her that letter you wrote me the day before yesterday saying what you thought of her. It was extremely ripe stuff, as I recall. That should work it.
Golly!
Don't you agree?
I certainly do. One glance at those burning phrases and Florence will be hopping mad.
Precisely. Well, come along. Think on your feet. Will you give Uncle Percy the treatment?
You promise you'll show Florence that letter?
Faithfully.
Is Boko at his post?
Sure to be by now.
Then out of my way. Here we go.
Despite the mood of fiery resolution in which I strode towards the house, it would be paltering with the truth to pretend that I was looking forward to the forthcoming séance with the relative. I have, I think, made it sufficiently clear that few harder eggs ever stepped out of the saucepan than this Percival, Lord Warbleston. In disposition, akin to a more than ordinarily short-tempered snapping turtle, he resembled in appearance a malevolent C. Aubrey Smith, and usually, when one encountered him, gave the impression of being about to foam at the mouth. The prospect of bursting into the study of such a one, and haranguing him, therefore, was hardly attractive. Already, indeed, as I neared the French windows of the old buzzard's sanctum, the temperature of the feet had become sensibly lowered, and I was conscious of an emptiness behind the diaphragm, and a disposition to gulp. Whether I would have steeled myself to the task or not, I shall never know, for as I rounded the corner of the house, I ran once again into Jeeves, who casually drew my attention to a weird procession that was slowly making its way across the lawn.
Mr. Fittleworth, sir, followed by the under-gardener, who is in turn followed by his lordship.
What the devil's going on, Jeeves?
I gather, sir, that his lordship stumbled across the young gentleman while taking a short walk by the lake and is now in the process of seeing him off the premises.
Golly, Jeeves! Well, if Boko's no longer among those present, there's no point my hanging about, what?
Sir?
Sorry, Jeeves, I'm afraid I haven't managed to keep you abreast of recent events. Kicking young Edwin failed to bring home the bacon. Unfortunately, Florence, far from being indignant, was delighted, as the little pest had just pasted half the reviews of Spindrift wrong side up in her album.
Indeed, sir.
Yes, so to cut a long story short, I was then persuaded by Nobby to re-enroll in the ticking off Uncle Percy scheme. However, due to Boko's imminent departure from the landscape, my services are clearly no longer required in that direction. So I think I shall drift away like thistledown before Uncle Percy returns, what?
Very good, son.
Bertie! Bertie!
Oh, my gosh. He spotted me. Hello, Uncle Bertie.
My dear fella. just the chap I wanted to see.
Who? Me?
Yes, you. The very fella. Come in and have a drink party.
Drink? Isn't it a bit early?
Nonsense, nonsense. It's never too early to have a drink if you've been wading ankle deep in blasted fickleworths. I was taking a stroll in this cigar, my mind deeply occupied with vital personal problems, and my foot came down on something squashy. And there the frightful chap was, reclining in my personal grass as if he'd been a dashed field mouse or something. If I'd had a weak heart, it might have been the end of me. Oh, fickleness. Friend of yours, isn't it?
Bosom.
You would do well to choose your friends more carefully. Soda?
Thanks.
But never mind him. My gardening staff has seen him off the premises with strict orders to jab him in the seat of his pence with a pitchfork if he dares to offer the slightest resistance. I venture to think that these grounds will see less of him in the future. And by George, that is what Bumpley Hall wants, to make it an earthly paradise. Fewer and better fickleworths. Have a cigar, Bertie.
I don't think so, thanks.
Nonsense. I can't understand this in-and-out policy of yours with regard to my cigars. When I don't want you to smoke them, you do. Remember that hunting crop when you were 15, eh? Yes, and when I do want you to smoke them, you don't. All silly nonsense. Now put this in your face, you young rascal.
Thanks.
Now do sit down, my dear fellow. I want you to be all relaxed and comfortable because I have something very important to consult you about. First and foremost, cheerio, Bertie.
Cheerio.
Success to crime.
Skin off your nose.
Mud in your eye. Yes. Now, first and foremost, I wish to express my appreciation of your spectacularly admirable conduct on the drive just now. I met Edwin out there and he told me you had kicked him. A thing I've been wanting to do for years, but never had the nerve.
Oh, it was nothing.
And I don't mind admitting, my boy, that the thing has completely revolutionized my opinion of you. For years, I've been looking on you as a mere lackadaisical, spiritless young man about town, and I see now how wrong I was. You have shown yourself to be possessed of the highest executive qualities, and I've decided that you are the chap to advise me in the crisis which has arisen in my affairs.
Ah.
I'm in a painful dilemma, Bertie. But perhaps you've heard about it from Jeeves.
Well, he did give me some sort of outline.
Chichester Clam?
Yes.
My vital need for meeting him in secret session?
Yes.
Well, that clears the ground, then. He was the man in the potting shed last night. Curious fellow.
Oh, yes?
Yes, curious. I wonder how I can describe him to you. Ever seen a fawn?
Like the chaps in that picture with the nymphs?
No, not that sort of fawn. I mean the animal. The timid fawn that shivers and shakes and at the slightest suspicion of danger starts like a fawn. That's Clam. Not to look at, I don't mean. He's stouter than the average fawn, and he wears fawn-rimmed spectacles, which, of course, fawns don't. I'm referring to his character. Disposition. He's nervous, quivering, gets the wind up at the slightest provocation. Came out that potting shed, I understand, shaking like a leaf and saying never again. He wants to take the next boat back to New York. Knows he'll be wrecking the business deal of a lifetime by doing so, but says he doesn't care just so long as he gets God's broad, deep Atlantic Ocean in between him and the English potting shed. Most extraordinary prejudice he seems to have taken against potting sheds. So keep steadily in your mind the fact that whatever you may have to suggest must be totally free from anything in the nature of a pot-and-shed angle. What have you to suggest, Patty?
Me? Yes. I think we'd better consult Jeeves.
I've consulted Jeeves and he says he's baffled.
What? Jeeves says he's baffled?
Tell me so himself. That's why I've come to you. Fresh mind.
When did he say that?
Last night.
Ah, but he's had a refreshing sleep since then, and you know how a spot of sleep picks you up. And by Jove, Uncle Percy, I'll tell you something else I've just remembered. Early this morning, I came upon him fishing in the river.
Well, what of it?
Well, the fact is tremendously significant. Yes. A man of his caliber would be bound to have caught a few. No doubt he had them for breakfast, in which case his faculties would have been greatly stimulated.
Is that so?
Oh, yes. Most of his major triumphs have been accomplished on fish. The phosphorus, you know.
Oh, of course, yes.
Even a single sardine will sometimes do the trick. Shall I call him? He's outside pacing up and down the lawn.
Do so, me boy.
Jeeves, Jeeves.
Sir?
His lordship would like a word.
Very good, sir.
Come along, Jeeves, come along.
And, my lord?
Did you, catch any fish this morning?
Two, my lord.
Have them for breakfast?
Yes, my lord.
Splendid! Capital! Excellent! Then come along! Come along!
My lord?
I was telling his lordship how fish always gingers up your thought processes, Jeeves. He's rather expecting that you may now have something constructive to suggest in re another meeting with Chichester Clam.
I'm sorry, sir. I've used every endeavour to hit upon a solution of the problem confronting his lordship. But I regret to say that my efforts have not been crowned with success.
A washout, he says.
Really? Dash it. Any good offering you drink, Jeeves, might buck you up.
I fear not, my lord. Alcohol has a sedative rather than a stimulating effect on me.
Oh. In that case, nothing to blow, I suppose. All right, Jeeves. Thanks.
Thank you, lord.
Well... That's that, what?
Eh?
Well, I mean, if Jeeves is baffled, Hope would appear to be more or less dead.
Nonsense, Barty. Nonsense, nothing of the kind. Jeeves isn't the only man in this house with a head on his shoulders. Anyone who could conceive the idea of kicking Edwin and carrying it out as brilliantly as you did is not to be beaten by a simple problem like this.
But
I am relying on you, Barty. Chichester Clam, how to meet him.
But
don't give it up. Think again.
But
off you go. Go and brood all over the grounds. I shall expect you back here with a new plan in, say, half an hour. Good night.
Oh, gosh.
In Schemes and Ruses, the parts were played as follows. Jeeves, Michael Horden, Bertie Wooster, Richard Briers, Percy Lord Worplesdon, Peter Woodthorpe, Boko Fittleworth, Jonathan Cecil, Edwin the Boy Scout, Denise Breyer, Florence Cray, Bronwyn Williams, Nobby Hopwood, Rosalind Adams. Joy in the Morning by P.G. Woodhouse was adapted for radio by Chris Miller. The program was produced by Simon Brett.